The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Successful people can be at the top of their game in the business world and as parents, but it can sometimes be difficult to stay above it all. Now it's time to learn from an entrepreneur who has made this a reality. Welcome to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood, hosted by Chris Efesiu. Chris and his guests will share ideas and experiences to help you manage your life in business and as a parent. Now, here's Chris Efesiu.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining me today on this very special broadcast from Voice America's studios in Phoenix, Arizona. Few of us, if any, have not heard of the controversy around the book titled Lean In, Women, Work, and the Will to Lead, authored by Sheryl Sandberg, Facebook's chief operating officer. The book has found as many friends as it has found foes far and wide. Questions abound on the issues of women in leadership, women's role in business, exclusionary statements centered on the fact that she is a wealthy married woman who doesn't necessarily represent the vast majority of women in business, and others like it. Now, being professionally ambitious and being a loving and engaged parent are not mutually exclusive. That has been my position, which I have outlined in my own book, CDO, Chief Daddy Officer. But more importantly, my guest and I will put this and other concepts through a test today over the next hour. And my guest today is Bettina Lawton. Bettina Lawton, Esquire of Lawton, of Law Office of Bettina M. Lawton, is uniquely qualified to address the subject. Bettina is AV preeminent rated by Martindale Hubble, its highest rating for lawyers' excellence, a recognition achieved by only 5% of women lawyers. She has been on the ABA Commission on Women for 10 years, both as a commissioner as well as a liaison from the Law Practice Management section. She was a researcher and editor of the book Empowerment and Leadership for Women Attorneys. She is the president of the Executive Women's Roundtable, which is where I had the pleasure of meeting Bettina not long ago. At the age of 32, she became the youngest woman elected president of the Women's Bar Association of the District of Columbia and has been a long-term equity partner in a major law firm, and it is my pleasure to have her as my guest today. Bettina, welcome.
Thanks, Chris. It's great to be here with you.
Wonderful to have you. So let's just get right to the heart of it. What's the brouhaha over the Sandberg book? She has obviously authored a book that speaks strongly and loudly to an awful lot of women and on a positive side, and an equal number, it seems, on the negative.
Well, I think the most interesting thing about the criticism of the Sandberg book is how much of it came out before the book came out. You had a lot of people in the major media market criticizing her message, and they had actually never read the book, which I found to be fairly typical. Whenever a prominent woman puts out any kind of position concerning whether women are being treated fairly, whether we need more women in leadership, there's always a huge pushback. There's always a huge backlash from all sectors of society. With Sandberg, I think it's a combination of a number of things. She's young, she's attractive, she's rich, she's married. And so she was an easy target for a lot of people to say, what does she really know what she's talking about? She's had an easy life. She has a couple of degrees from Harvard. She was sponsored by very powerful men during her career. She really doesn't know what she's talking about. And I think that that's kind of a classic reaction to women who speak out.
And I personally take issue with that because the last time I checked, Harvard University or Business School, which I believe one of her degrees comes from, it does not hand degrees out to just about anybody because they are young and rich and the like. The fact that she is a young mother and she was sponsored by and mentored by powerful men, that is a feather in her cap as opposed to a bed mark against her. This woman did the work. There is no question about the fact that she did the work. And I suppose I'm going to get as much flack about it as I'm going to get praise, but who cares about the flack? I am astounded at the fact that that people are just absolutely undercutting and negating the fact of, that she has accomplished what she has accomplished because of what her demographic is, as if this was handed to her and she did nothing to earn it.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, Chris. You can get into Harvard if you're really smart. Some people I have read say, well, she was connected in some fashion, although I frankly have not seen how that really is a fact. I think that's more of people's jealousy speaking. But even if you get into Harvard, you really have to perform. And she was, apparently, from what I have read, very accomplished. And the reality is that given the demographics of who the political and business leaders are in this country, and in fact in the world, the fact that she was mentored by powerful men is not surprising. There are not a lot of powerful women to go around. And back in the day when I was an equity partner in one of the big Am Law 100 firms, that was something that we commented on a lot. There were not enough of us to go around. So you have to, as a woman, look for sponsors or mentors wherever you can find them. And in a lot of times, if you're lucky, you will find a man who is willing to take the risk to develop that type of relationship with you, because it is a risk for senior men to sponsor young, attractive women. And we'd like to think that it wasn't so. I would like to think that in the years since I first became involved in the practice of law back in 1980, that has changed, but it hasn't changed. And so the fact that she was sponsored by powerful men is not something that legitimately can be held against her. I think there's a lot of jealousy, and I think there's a lot of fear, because if you're silent about the fact that women are not getting into leadership positions, if we all just sort of go along as if everything's fine, you don't have to do anything. You can feel good about yourself. You can feel good about your company if nobody's challenging you to take a look at what you're actually doing. And what Sheryl Sandberg did was actually stand up and say, you know, the revolution has stalled. The women's revolution has simply been stopped in its tracks for the last 10 years. And it's absolutely true. I went back and I looked at the book that I was in charge of doing the research and the editing for. It was published back in 2004 by the American Bar Association. And at the beginning of the Empowerment and Leadership book, it notes that there were 16% of the law partners in the United States in 2004 were women. And I looked over the last couple of days getting ready for your show to say, well, what's today? It must be higher than 16%. It's been 9 years. And it's actually less. It's down around 15%. So not only has the revolution been stalled, to use Sheryl Sandberg's phrase, but at least with respect to equity partners in law firm, which is where the real power and the real leadership is, women have gone backwards. And I don't know that it's all that much better in the corporate world. I have seen the statistics that say only 21 of the Fortune 500 CEOs are women, that executive position, executive officer type positions are down around the 14%. You and I had a conversation when we met a bit ago about the dearth of women on corporate boards. This is a fact. The women are not in these leadership positions, and it takes someone who has achieved, quite frankly, and who is secure in their position, like a Sheryl Sandberg, to speak up and talk about it, because it can really kill your career if you're not already a woman who has achieved.
That goes without saying, and parenthetically here, what the women's position happens to be in corporate boards and in corporate America as a whole, it has not advanced any more than it was 10 or 15 years ago, though there are a lot more women in the workforce today than there were several years ago, and those women are just as educated and just as goal-oriented as men. Why that happens, there are a number of different hypotheses. No one knows for sure, and I have seen no significant study that actually can convince me or anyone else that this is reason number one, or so that we are seeing this stalling in the revolution. But the fact remains that if we're not stalling, we're certainly not advancing.
And
That is not something that, whether you're a man or a woman in business, you can be proud of, because just like it takes a village to do everything, it takes a village to build leadership. And the last time I checked, leadership in a corporation or anywhere else does not come in the form of pants or skirt. It comes in the form of brain power, drive and intellect, together with an awful lot of empathy and heart, to lead from the heart to get to the point where your organization, be it a Fortune 500 company or a small company, need to be. So it isn't a place where people in business, people in industry in general, in professions, can really be happy about, because we haven't, for all of the advancement that we have made, we haven't really gotten there.
Well, we haven't, and there have been some studies that have been done. I know there were some that came out of looking over in Europe at the composition of their boards, because some of their countries actually mandate a certain percentage of their boards have to be women. And they have done some looking at that to say, what's the effect of having women in senior leadership positions in the companies? And what they've looked at is said, when you have that diversity of opinion at the table, your return on investment is higher. Your company does better. Your profits tend to go up. Now, obviously, that isn't universal, but statistically, it's significant. And so business would really be well advised to diversify more in terms of having women on the board, women in senior leadership, as well as, more broadly, people of diversity, because the different voices that you get at the table makes your decision-making maybe a little bit messier, because not everybody is, singing from the same book anymore, but you can end up with a much better product, a much better strategy to reach the markets that are increasingly diverse. So it really makes a great deal of sense for more women and persons of minority status to be elevated into leadership positions and onto the boards of these corporations. But a lot of people criticize Sandberg because of her notion of women need to lean in.
Let me interrupt right here to take us to a short commercial break, and we will take that very important subject as soon as we come back. My guest is Bettina Lawton. I'm Chris Effacy. We'll be back in a moment.
Find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network by keeping up with us on Twitter. You can find us at Voice America TRN. Are you a father trying to figure out how to effectively communicate with your daughter? Perhaps you're a working mother trying to juggle the weight of running a business and a household. Entrepreneur, business leader, speaker, mentor, and coach, Chris Epicu understands the challenge of being a working parent. In the last 20 years, he founded several businesses, bought and sold companies, hired over 1,000 employees, while raising his daughter as a single dad. It is the parenting of his daughter that he considers his single largest accomplishment. Chris is now sharing his lessons on how to be a mentor, communicate effectively, and cultivate leadership principles for your business and your family by using the same skills and concepts common in all well-run businesses. His book, CDO, Chief Daddy Officer, The Business of Fatherhood, explores his relationship with his daughter and how he was able to negotiate his way to professional and personal success. Visit www.cdochiefdaddyofficer.com for more information on his book, speaking engagements, and other offerings and activities.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood with your host, Chris Epicu. If you have a question or comment for Chris and his guest, please call 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. If you'd rather send an email, please send it to chris@straightupwithchris.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Straight Up with Chris. I'm Chris Epicu. My guest is Bettina Lawton. For information on this program and other activities, please visit my website, chrisepicu.com, or cdochiefdaddyofficer.com. My Facebook page is Chris Epicu, and on Twitter, I'm Chief Daddy Officer. Please visit Bettina's website, which is bettinalawton.com. I'll spell that for you. It's BettinaLawton.com. And on LinkedIn, she is Bettina Lawton. Before we went on break, we were talking about all things Lean In and Sheryl Sandberg, and we were about to discuss what it is that she is saying that has people upset about it.
Well, Chris, I think one of the things that a lot of women are saying is that by telling women that they need to lean in. And when Sheryl Sandberg talks about leaning in, she is really talking about being ambitious and pursuing big goals and not sort of self-censoring yourself. And a number of women say, well, you're blaming the women for not being aggressive enough. So there are folks who have said to me over the last several days, you know, there are enough women out there who have been working really hard for all of these years, and it's insulting for someone to come along and say you're not doing enough. How much more can we possibly do? And other women who are saying she's ignoring the need for organizations to also contribute towards women's success, that the way organizations are set up, the societal expectations that are set up on women, particularly women who are mothers, that you can't ignore that and just say to the women, you need to do this, you need to make this happen for yourself, because it's not realistic and it just puts more of a burden, more pressure, and more guilt on women, and that it's not warranted, because women have been out there working extremely hard for decades and decades. Women became more than half of the college graduates in this country sometime in the 1980s. So we have been out there working really hard at this type of thing. And I think that's a misinterpretation of her book. I do wonder if it is being said by those folks that I mentioned at the beginning of the show who haven't even read the book, because that's really not what she is saying. She is very clearly talking about the need for women to recognize that they do have to be assertive. She has tons and tons of studies and footnotes and very interesting information in the book. That's what I personally found most interesting about the book, was all of the research and resources that she puts out there for you. About a third of the total pages in her book are footnotes that take you back to the original source studies on what she's trying to tell the women. And so I think it's a very valuable book to pick up and read.
I agree with that. And it is, she is obviously a person who believes in backing up her arguments with data, hence the footnotes and all the third-party information she brings into the book to form the basis of her argument. But I tend to believe that there are a couple of different angles that people are coming at this book, criticizing the book by saying, she is just too myopic at that, and she does not represent the masses, and perhaps the fact that while it is accurate that half of the college graduates in the 80s were women, and believe last year or the year before, the admissions to medical schools across the United States, women for the first time surpassed the number of men who were admitted to medical schools. Not a surprise, since live births in the U.S. for the past decade plus are more girls than boys. Therefore, those girls will become women and boys will become men, and it's a numbers game. We can't avoid it. What we can avoid is looking at the facts as the facts don't exist, looking at things as if we wish they were not, and ignoring what it really is. And what it is, yes, we need to make changes. As you said before, there needs to be a greater diversity, a diversity not necessarily only on the side of sex, but also on the side of ethnic background, because when you have that, you on a corporate board or in any board, that makes for better governance, because that is what boards are about. Why that doesn't happen, I think we can pontificate till the cows come home, but I think that you and I have had conversations, and we will get into that in a minute, that there are times, almost equal number of times in my experience, that women have absolutely done their best to get to the top, and they were halted. Then there were other times, and I have had plenty of knowledge and experience on that, that women from a very early age in the business world, they set their own limits far too close to where they are now and not close enough to where they want to be, because they're saying that, hey, at some point I want to start a family and, you know, that would be important. My argument to that is the person that's sitting next to that young lady in a business school class, both will graduate, you know, this May. One's a girl, one's a boy. Both will at some point start families. But I doubt if the guy says, well, you know, I'm going to start a family in a couple of years, 5 years, 10 years, whenever, and therefore, you know, that would be an important thing, so I shouldn't really dedicate all that I have into getting to where I need to be. And I guess the question is it a perception? Is it a mindset? What is it?
I think it's a cultural message, and I think it's the way that society really is set up. If you look at the gap in pay, even controlling for time out of to take care of children, even if you control that, women make less than men. Women make less than men coming right out of law schools, business schools. You can see it in the statistics out there about what people make. And so on an economic basis, the message typically is, if you make less, then your career is second best. And if you're going to have children, then you simply need to recognize that you, as the woman, is the one who's going to have to step back. And I think there is that expectation. And there is, of course, the whole notion that somehow women are better, and I'm sure Chris will find this completely offensive, but that women are better at raising children. And it's really not true. It is, there is nothing, once you get past the, we're the ones who can nurse them, there is really nothing inherently special about women that says they will be the better parent. But that tends to be society's expectation. Even till this day, I hear people say, employers say, well, I don't really want to invest a lot of training money into women because they get married, they have kids, they don't come back. And I'm always shocked that it's still being said. And employers still seem to think that the reason the women don't come back is they prefer to be home, as opposed to perhaps the workplace isn't set up for them. If a high-paying professional is today expected to work 50 hours or more, which is pretty standard, and you're going to end up being the one who has to run back and forth to take care of the kid because that's the expectation, you are going to not show back up. It's the type of thing that happened here, and they just reversed it. I saw it in the paper this morning. There's a very major hospital chain here in the Northern Virginia area that provided child care. The hospitals are notorious for irregular hours and shift changes, both for their doctors, for their physical therapists, their nurses, everyone. And they decided to do away with their child care center. Now, the company itself had a lot of money. It had $116 million of profit last year. And the child care center cost $1 million, and they decided to do away with it. And all of these women, principally, were quoted as saying, well, what am I going to do now? Where am I going to find this child care? And how am I going to continue to work? You didn't see a lot of men being quoted, because the assumption always is that the women are going to take care of it, and the women are the ones who are going to step back. And that's part of the message that Sandberg is saying, which is you need to redefine what's acceptable in your own relationship. And she quotes a very interesting study, and I certainly wish this study had been done back when my children were young. They're both grown men now. But there was a study that was done by the National Institute of Child Health and Human Development. It was a 15-year longitudinal study that reported out in 2006 about the effect of child care versus stay-at-home mother care on children to see, is this really a problem? Because so much of sort of the mother guilt, the mommy wars, all of that kind of stuff comes about by, oh, it's bad for the kids. We can't have all these women working. It's bad for the kids. And the interesting thing that this study showed was that there was no difference in the cognitive skills or the language ability or the social behavior of the kids that could be tied directly to the daycare. Parental attitude, however, played a huge portion of the effect on the children. And so that was the thing that was really important.
Parental attitude always does play a huge role in the way children look at their parents. And I want to pick up where we're leaving off for a commercial break, just on the other side of the break, as to the importance of the mother versus the father raising a child. Is there really one? And explore a little bit on that area. My guest is Bettina Lawton. You're listening to Straight Up with Chris, Real Talk on Business and Parenthood. I'm Chris FSE. We'll be back in a moment.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Are you a father trying to figure out how to effectively communicate with your daughter? Perhaps you're a working mother trying to juggle the weight of running a business and a household. Entrepreneur, business leader, speaker, mentor, and coach, Chris Epicu understands the challenge of being a working parent. In the last 20 years, he founded several businesses, bought and sold companies, hired over 1,000 employees while raising his daughter as a single dad. It is the parenting of his daughter that he considers his single largest accomplishment. Chris is now sharing his lessons on how to be a mentor, communicate effectively, and cultivate leadership principles for your business and your family by using the same skills and concepts common in all well-run businesses. His book, CDO, Chief Daddy Officer, The Business of Fatherhood, explores his relationship with his daughter and how he was able to negotiate his way to professional and personal success. Visit www.cdochiefdaddyofficer.com for more information on his book, speaking engagements, and other offerings and activities.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood with your host, Chris Epicu. If you have a question or comment for Chris and his guest, please call 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. If you'd rather send an email, please send it to chris@straightupwithchris.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Straight Up with Chris. I'm Chris Epicu with my guest, Bettina Lawton. Please visit her website, bettinalawton.com, and Bettina Lawton on LinkedIn. Lots to talk about, lots we've been talking about the role of women and men in the business sector, in professional sectors, how advanced and how antiquated at sometimes we are, unfortunately, both at the same time. And during the short break, we were having an offline conversation, which I wanted to bring online because it became so interesting that the point I was making to Bettina was that I recently heard from a close friend that it was someone in the legal profession, the government side of legal profession, that a decision was made that a position was to be given to a man who was married and his wife was expecting a child, as opposed to an equally qualified woman. And what floored me was that the acceptance of that kind of decision making was de facto by all parties. And it makes me really pull my hair out and say, where are we in the 1940s? I mean, do I go to school if I'm a woman or a man? Do I go to school to educate myself to get a job and have equal right to equal opportunity? But now because somebody happens to have the same seniority, the same experience, the same grades out of law school, the same everything, that person gets the job because he's going to have to pay a mortgage because he's got babies coming? I mean, does kudos to him, but it should take more than having a baby coming into this world than to lend you a job. I mean, that's not what you go to school for. And those are the kinds of things that as far as we have come, when I hear comments like this, it just makes me ill because that takes us back to the Dark Ages.
Well, it takes us back to the Dark Ages, and it is clearly works against the women because it doesn't happen in the reverse. If you show up, first of all, if you show up looking for a job and you're pregnant, you usually make darn sure that whoever is interviewing you doesn't know it because they don't look at this and say, oh, let's hire the pregnant woman and give her the job because she's going to need it because she's having this baby. It's more of a, oh, my gosh, we don't want to hire this person because she's going to go out and then she's going to have this baby and then she's going to be gone for however long she's going to be gone for, and who knows if she'll come back. And so it doesn't work in the reverse. It only works to the favor of men. And that is one of the things that in theory is against the law, but proving it is never anybody's great interest. One of the things that I learned early on in my career, and you mentioned how young I was when I got elected to be president of the Women's Bar Association in D.C., and one of the things that you learned very young is that regardless of what happened to you, if you felt you were discriminated against, if you felt that opportunities were not provided to you because you were a woman, you didn't sue. The women back in the day and even today who would sue law firms claiming that they were discriminated against, inevitably their career was trashed. And we saw it time and time and time again. And so the need to come up with alternative strategies, it doesn't do any good to say that's illegal, that shouldn't happen this way. You have to come up with alternative ways of finding your answers. And I think that's one of the benefits of women organizations. And even back in the day when I was president of the Women's Bar, people would say, why do we need these women's organizations? And only a few weeks ago with the Executive Women's Roundtable, the question was asked again, why do we need these kinds of women's organizations? And it's because there is strength in numbers. And you can take positions and advocate for changes that, as a group, the responsibility or their ability to take any kind of negative action against an entire group is much less than they could if it were simply one woman standing up and saying, let's do this. Unless, of course, you happen to be a woman like Sheryl Sandberg, who is the COO of Facebook. You know, what are they going to do about that? Nothing. She can stand up and say these things, and there isn't going to be a big consequence to her about it, other than the personal animosity that she seems to have engendered. She's not going to lose her job. She's not going to lose all of her stock options and all of her wealth because she's out there advocating that women find ways of negotiating for themselves that will get us more of what we want to do. But it does speak very definitely to the notion that some things simply haven't changed. And we as a society and couples, parents need to look at their own lives and say, what is important to me? How am I going to define what I consider to have a successful family or a successful career, and then work towards that? And that really is something that has to be done on both sides of the gender aisle, because issues affecting family affects the whole family. It doesn't just affect the women. Now, there are so many families out there that both parents are working. And it isn't a question of luxury. It isn't a question of, oh, gee, I'm doing this to, you know, fulfill myself. It's because the family needs the money. And so this really becomes an issue of the, you know, survival and prosperity of family units. And these issues have to be worked out. And men are just as important to the equation as the women are in getting these things solved.
Absolutely. Before we go there, and believe me, we're going there because that's very near and dear to my heart, I want to sidestep and kind of take the play devil's advocate a little bit here. And that is on the women's business groups. Now, anyone who knows me knows that I practice what I preach. Over the past 22 years of owning my own businesses, I have hired over 1,000 people. 5 were men. This is not by accident. And at the risk of sounding too cliche, when the best man for the job is a woman, I don't care what the sex, creed, orientation, ethnic or otherwise, of that person is. I want the right person in the right seat, and I want to invest in them and advance them. Young women, would they get pregnant? Absolutely. I'll make it easy for them to come back to work so that they don't feel that pregnancy is the exit ticket. So I'm all for it, and I breathe it, I live it, I do it every day. Here's the thing. In women's groups that we call the women's business groups, the women's XYZ group, if truly we're trying to bridge the gap or trying to merge more succinctly the two cultures that, as amazing as it may seem, we're still trying to merge them, if we're trying to make to have men and women at the same table, why do we segregate the men and the women? Why do we have to have women business groups? And to the other side of the aisle, how would it sound as if one were to go out and create a men's business group and call it that?
Well, I don't think you have to call it that, because historically, and this is changing, but historically they were simply called chambers of commerce.
Right.
And that's the difference. And frankly, if the women, for example, in the executive women's roundtable, if all those women ever did was get together with the other women in the roundtable, which is always fabulous, then I would agree and say this is not a good thing. But the reality is that just as much as I am president of the Executive Women's Roundtable, I'm also in the Chamber of Commerce. I'm also in the Bar Association activities. I am also out in the community with all genders, all types of diversity. But the studies over the years have shown that there is a different dynamic when it is just women together, that they tend to be more outspoken, that they tend to develop their leadership skills. It's a safer place in many circumstances for women to try out different leadership styles. So it's a good thing to have, as long as we recognize that it can't be the only thing.
That is the most cogent answer to this question I have ever received, and I thank you for that, because usually it is something outlandish that makes no sense. Your answer does make sense. Thank you. And so, how does that parenting equation, the responsibility, the shared responsibility, should affect the career of both working mom and working dad? Because, as you correctly pointed out earlier, moms don't go to work because they just want to get out of the house. I suppose some do, but this is by far not the majority. They go out there because they need the money. And the demographics is obviously changing, because something we had never seen 5-10 years ago was stay-at-home dads.
Mm-hmm.
So when the mom has the better job now, and the dad either has a job that he can do from home, or that his career was in a different path, and now he feels that, hey, I'm going to parent the kids, you earn the money, that would have drawn not great accolades several years ago. Today, those men are admired because they're doing – and I don't know that they are admired for the right thing. You shouldn't be admired for parenting your child. That's your job. That's your responsibility. But they're admired because they're doing something that is outside of the norm. And that, to me, is as heartening as it is disheartening, because we should be given credit where credit is due. And for the right reasons. But when we come back, we will dedicate the last segment of this broadcast to what should men and women do, both in the boardroom as well as in the living room, to drive a company or an organization forward, as well as drive their own family forward. My guest is Bettina Lawton. You're listening to Straight Up with Chris, Real Talk on Business and Parenthood. I'm Chris Efesiou. We'll be back in a moment.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
Are you a father trying to figure out how to effectively communicate with your daughter? Perhaps you're a working mother trying to juggle the weight of running a business and a household.
Entrepreneur, business leader, speaker, mentor, and coach, Chris Epiciu understands the challenge of being a working parent. In the last 20 years, he founded several businesses, bought and sold companies, hired over 1,000 employees, while raising his daughter as a single dad. It is the parenting of his daughter that he considers his single largest accomplishment. Chris is now sharing his lessons on how to be a mentor, communicate effectively, and cultivate leadership principles for your business and your family by using the same skills and concepts common in all well-run businesses. His book, CDO, Chief Daddy Officer, The Business of Fatherhood, explores his relationship with his daughter and how he was able to negotiate his way to professional and personal success. Visit www.cdochiefdaddyofficer.com for more information on his book, speaking engagements, and other offerings and activities.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Straight Up with Chris. Real talk on business and parenthood with your host, Chris Epiciu. If you have a question or comment for Chris and his guest, please call 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. If you'd rather send an email, please send it to chris@straightupwithchris.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Straight Up with Chris. I'm Chris Epiciu. My guest is Bettina Lawton. Please visit her website, bettinalawton.com, and Bettina Lawton on LinkedIn. It seems as though people have this mindset that they have to make a choice and make a choice early on. I'm either a parent or I'm a business person. I'm the breadwinner, or I'm the person who, you know, takes care of the house. And years ago, the breadwinners were the men, and women took care of the house. That changed in much more of a both parties are now working. I'm not sure both parties are taking care of the house. And some exceptions that now we have stay-at-home dads and working moms, which is the swing of the pendulum to the very opposite end. So, as I said at the opening of the show, to be an ambitious professional and to be a good, loving parent, engaged parent, those two things are not mutually exclusive. They don't compete with one another other than for time and energy. And that means that you have to partition, allocate that time and energy, at least in my own mind. What's your opinion on that?
Well, I think that you do. And fortunately for many people, the type of energy and the type of mental energy, not just physical energy, but mental energy that you need for your job is different than what you need for your home life and for your children. And so if you can get a little bit of the separation there and not, unfortunately, be the folks who get home and check their emails before they have dinner and are constantly available 24/7 to their employer, you can have some of that energy because it's a different energy that you need to do that. I think a lot of people think they have to do it all, and they have to do it all at the same time. And this notion, I will tell you, of, you know, family work balance, I laugh at that. There is no balance. You know, on one day when my children were young, if my child was sick, that's where I was. There wasn't a balance. I was gone. I was history. I was saying to the people who worked for me, you need to take this meeting because I got to get my kid to the doctors, or my son's got a temperature of 104. I'm not coming in at all. Call me on the phone. Other days where I was at trial, because I was a trial attorney in my early career, you're a trial. And, you know, your child may have had a fight with their friend, but that's got to wait because you got to take care of the business end of it. So there's no real, you have to look at it as a balancing over time, not a balancing that says every single day I am going to give half of myself to my family and half of myself to my job. And I think people who look at it in those narrow terms are bound to feel guilty. They're bound to feel disappointed. They're bound to feel like failures. And what we have to look at is all of the studies that say that children actually prosper pretty well in their development when they have working parents. They become more self-sufficient. They get more self-confident because you aren't hovering over them all of the time. And they have an opportunity to develop their own personalities. And so there are some benefits there, and we have to ease back on ourselves, I think, to recognize that over time it comes out about even, and you just have to be comfortable with the choices that you're making and working with your partner to make the choices that make sense for your family. And that, I think, is really the important piece. In your own family, you have to have it working. You know, one of the concepts that absolutely drives me up a wall is when men will say they have to go home and babysit. And I think to myself, what are you babysitting? They're your children. This is not babysitting. And so there's a different mindset that needs to happen where both parents look and say, this is our responsibility. It's our joint responsibility. If both parents are taking that responsibility, then both people have an opportunity to have a satisfying career, as opposed to one, typically the woman, stepping back and saying, I've got to sacrifice. And over the long term, that's really bad for the family unit economically. There's studies that are cited in Sandberg's book talk about, as I said earlier, you know, the full-time maternal care is not necessarily better for the children. We need to get out of that guilt sort of cycle we get into on that and let it go and have the freedom to make the choices that we think are best for us and our family units. Men need to step it up and women need to let it go a little bit.
Amen to that. And again, the wise comment on this is that you don't have to be a Superman or a Superwoman to have it all. And the second part to that is that you can have it all, but you don't have to have it all today because there is no life-work balance, as you said. That's a question I'm asked every time, wherever it is that I speak. And the answer is you go to work every day and you give 110% there. And then you go home and you give 110% there. But I never told you that I gave 110% to both places on Monday.
Right.
Because mathematically it doesn't work, and it does not work in real life. And if nothing can stay afloat if it defies gravity. And that is not the kind of thing that parenting can be based on. Or a business relationship can be based on. I go even farther than that point to say that when young couples about to contemplating, you know, the family, the union of the two and starting a family and so on and so forth, we've heard a lot over the past several years of risk management now having to transfer into things that we never had to look at before. For instance, what's the financial health of your partner? Do you have the right to look into that or to ask him to disclose that information? And most people will say, better believe you have the right, because the moment you say I do, you have also said I do to a whole lot of bed stuff if you know that bed stuff is there. But what a surprise if you thought that, you know, everything was fine and then you're presented with this. Oh, by the way, I'm knee-deep in debt. So if we go to that, why shouldn't we go to have a discussion, to the point, to have a discussion well ahead of the I do's as to, well, you have a career and I have a career, and we will eventually have a family, correct?
Correct.
So how do you propose we manage this? What do you think of that? I mean, shouldn't that be a place to start? Shouldn't it be a place in an ideal world to kind of have the discussion started before you have a child that mom has to take care of 24/7 and dad has to babysit?
I think it's a discussion that people can have. Unfortunately, I think people look at having children with sort of rose-colored glasses. They know it's going to be expensive because you can read all of the, you know, money magazine type estimates that say if you have a kid today, it's going to cost you X hundreds of thousands of dollars to get them to be 18, let alone the cost of sending them to college. So people have a certain understanding of the financial commitment that they're making. What people get tied up on is the expectations, sort of the emotional attachments that say, you know, this kid can't survive without me, that I'm just so indispensable that I have to be around. I don't want to go back. It becomes one of those sort of societal predispositions, I think, that people really get into. And it goes back to what you said before the break about men who are staying home and they are getting all of these kudos for staying home and taking care of their children. Where women don't get those kudos when they stay home and take care of their children, because that's the expectation.
Correct.
So people can, I think, have the conversation ahead of time, and they need to, and they need to be realistic about it and recognize that, you know, their feelings about different things are going to be changing, but you have to keep talking. You have to keep talking about who's going to do what, who's going to take responsibility for what. And if you set up the broad agreement that says both of our careers are important, both of our careers are going to continue to progress, and we are going to find a way to make this work that doesn't involve one of us simply stepping off the track, you stand a much greater chance of actually having that happen and having the ability to have good careers and having a satisfactory family.
And having a happy marriage, because we both know that the statistics are very clear in the fact that one of the key reasons for ugliness in the marriage outside of money and sex is dissatisfaction with decision making. And that is a very major element that can cause somebody dissatisfaction. Bettina, in the last 30 seconds that we have, what would you tell our young women and men who are out there listening and they want your advice from a position of a woman in leadership?
My advice would be that you just keep working it. You don't give up. You keep, to quote Sheryl Sandberg, keep leaning in. Keep pushing for those changes that you need to succeed for yourself and for the generations to come.
And I will echo that, because unless you are part of creating the change is going to be created in a way that will be totally outside of your input, and that will not taste good.
That's right.
Thank you so much for your time, your input, your energy into this broadcast, and I hope that you will consider coming back to a future show.
Absolutely. I had a great time, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. Let's talk more next Thursday at 6 p.m. East, 3 West, on Straight Up with Chris, Real Talk for Business and Parenthood. Until then, seize the moment, every moment, at work and at home. I'm Chris FSCU. Thanks for listening.
Thank you again for tuning in to Straight Up with Chris, Real Talk on Business and Parenthood. Please join your host, Chris FSCU, again next Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time and 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Make it an engaging week at work and at home.